I will go down in that territory. Rhonda has been notified, so hopefully we'll thank you for.
I can wait down there for a little while because I don't come up until a little bit later.
I think we have your number.
Cool, Anna.
We got a whole group here.
Bill Brady.
Yes.
And that whole group for youth and governance.
They are. They were almost, well, they were locked out.
But they got to know you better.
We did. We had to exchange views.
I already spoke highly of you, so.
Okay, good, good.
Kept that going.
He'll be there. Actually, we can start. It's past time, so let's proceed with any citizen comments. Any citizen comments? No? All right, we'll move on to the next item. I have no reports. Do any committee members? Any? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple things to say. One is I had a comment from Supervisor Grady about a Department of Transportation project being done on Sheridan Road from Kenosha all the way up to 21st and Racine, and they're talking about going from four lanes to two lanes. So Supervisor Grady, his initial reaction was he was concerned about that.
Four lanes? You mean two lanes to four lanes?
No, four lanes to two lanes. The DOT is talking
during the work.
Yeah, they're talking about changing Sheridan Road from Kenosha all the way to 21st and Racine to a two-lane road instead of a four-lane road for any parts that are four lanes. So I did go and meet with the DOT.
I don't understand that.
Well, your reaction is the same as everyone else that's a local official here, and I don't know if I've had any other reactions but from the committee here. But I just wanted to make the committee aware that I've made the executive aware, I've made the chair of the board aware. I haven't talked to Public Works yet. Supervisor Grady was the first one to make me aware. His initial reaction was he was concerned about it. But at some point, and the village was initially opposed to it and wanted to go keep the four lanes.
Yeah.
The village was pretty clear, and a lot of the local public safety officials were concerned about it. At some point, and I will work with the executive, will work with the chair and the public works, I will work with the administration, but we may request a resolution to support the village if the request is to keep it four lanes. I don't know, we'll see. Maybe someone will discover something that we're missing and we don't know about. You never know, but we'll vet it properly and use best practices on development of the policy. And then the other one was the village is wanting to try to consolidate or simplify their zip code system. So I did reach out to, an email was sent out to the board. I think, I don't know if it came just to me, but I thought it went to the board. I think it went to the exec's office too. And so I did meet with the village on that one too. And so I may, again, don't know exactly if there's some unknown that makes it not good policy. Right now it seems like it would be good policy, and so I may bring another resolution to the board requesting the county board support the village of Summers on that as well, the village and town of Summers on that as well. So I just wanted to make the committee aware that I may be bringing those in. And right now Joe Cardamone is working on the one for the zip code, so he's aware of that and working on that.
Right.
One on Sheridan Road, they're not slated to do construction until 2028, possibly 2027. So it seems like we have a little time to get that figured out. But I've been driving that road for 50 years, and anytime one of the lanes is blocked off, it creates a traffic jam almost like over half the time, if not almost like there's waste pickup there's sometimes the road will be blocked for construction, other times the mail delivery occurs. It just causes a backup, and how could their traffic study not show that? That's the end of my report.
Yeah, John.
I was just going to say, so they're reducing the lanes from 4 to 2, but the construction doesn't start in 5 years?
Right.
Does anyone see a problem with that?
It's been a couple of years that they've been working on this, at least, because I heard it a couple of years
ago. I mean, if they're working on it, that's totally, but you made it sound like the construction isn't going to start until 2028, you said.
28 or 27.
But they're in the planning stages.
That's a lot of planning. That's 4 or 5 years of planning to reduce it to 2 lanes.
Okay. Why would you go from 4 to 2?
Well, probably because the traffic, they have to close a couple lanes to work on one side.
Because there's been a few bad accidents, too.
That's
what they did.
I can answer the question. I can, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman, I can.
Yes.
So when I went to the DOT report, the main thing was safety. And they talked about some studies they had that said that our incidence of crashes were higher than average. So they had that data. Our own public safety had gone through that in a granular way, and they saw other mitigating reasons for the accidents that weren't related to the engineering of the road, more relating to other circumstances, like a bar being there with, you know, that kind of thing. I would lean more towards our own public safety here, that boots on the ground knowing what's happening, but I you know, that's what I have seen at this point. Maybe we'll discover there is some compelling reason to do that.
Any other comments from supervisors? All right, seeing none. You have the minutes before you. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion on the minutes? All those in favor of approval, say aye.
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 Opposed? Next item is the two sheriff, three sheriff's resolutions, and that's going to be presented by you, Kathy.
Can I make a motion to take all three up at the same time?
I would second it.
Okay. So you want to vote, but if there is opposition, then we'll separate.
We can separate. Okay. I would be okay with that as a second.
Discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, you have the audience.
All right, good evening. We're here to talk about three resolutions between the county and the town of Paris, the town of Randall, and the town of Wheatland regarding providing animal control services. So basically the backstory is these towns used an organization called Claws and Paws up until that organization went defunct approximately a year ago. Since then, we've been handling animal control as best as we can. So, animal control services are typically handled through each municipality has their own. So, because we're the police agency for these townships, we kind of are the default call answerer when somebody finds a dog in their backyard or a cow or a goat or a pig, and we deal with it. So the village, so I communicated with each town's chairman and I said, what's your plan? And they didn't have one because there aren't any services in Kenosha County to handle this. They looked to us and we decided to come up with a solution to their problem. And that solution is we've already had a trained humane officer on the department to handle humane officer calls, which include investigations of animal cruelty, neglect, that sort of thing. And part of that is knowing how to handle and deal with animals. So we've now, after several meetings with all the townships, they've agreed very quickly to their boards they need to do something, and we are the solution to that. So we've come up with this contract. The contract indicates that we will respond to animal control calls, handle them appropriately, and then any time spent on those calls will be tracked and billed to the township on a quarterly basis. We've already added addendums to the villages that we have contracts with, because they're also had no solution. So those haven't been signed yet, but as soon as everything is taken care of, so Paddock Lake, Summers, Bristol, and then the three townships will all get their animal control services through the Sheriff's Department. We have one current humane officer. We are sending another one to training in, I believe, October. So that'll bring us to two. And this will allow, if a need for a specialty humane officer is identified, we will call that humane officer. If they're working, they'll just go to the call. If they're not, they will come from home, and that would be overtime, and that would be billed as overtime to the township or the village. Any deputy can handle easy to handle dog and put the dog in their backseat and take it to the Humane Society. But the, angry pit bulls and things like that that require more special training to handle, then we would call the humane officer. So basically there's no real cost to the Sheriff's Department, because it's all reimbursed through these contracts from the townships. We've developed forms that the deputies will fill out when they're on these calls, and that's the plan.
Dave.
Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the three.
Seconds.
Seconded by John.
Go ahead.
You're fighting over this. Both of you second.
It was two.
It's okay.
He beat me to it.
He can have
okay,
it.
I'll take it. Right. I second it.
John gets credit. Discussion?
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. All right, no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, that's unanimous. And thank you. We'll set up here. There are three different ones to sign, right?
Yeah.
All right, the next is County Clerk tax deeded property.
Hi. All right, so probably need some backup here from John Moyer from Corporation Counsel. The tax deed law has been changed. And I did send a copy of the act and outlined some of the changes that were made. This is going to, I feel, make pricing these tax deed properties a little more difficult. If the understanding of the changes in Statute 7536 is a little muddy, I would say, right? And so we've sat through some discussions and trying to really get a grasp on how we're going to do this. You know, now that we've started doing the in rem process for the tax deed properties, we're getting a lot more. And so now I have all these and I need to sell them, but then the change in the tax deed law is going to make pricing them difficult, or selling them at the price that the law is saying that we need to sell them at. And so what I gave to you guys was an overview at first of what's owed on the property, what the assessment is on the property, and what the fair market value is. Most of these homes, as you know in the past, most of the tax delinquent homes are in pretty bad shape. So their assessments and their fair market value really don't reflect the property. there's, but I have no, I don't have a lot of ways to prove what needs to be done on these properties. Our understanding of the law is that we need to start the auction at or near the fair market value of the property unless we have good documentation on why we can reduce that price. So that would be in some of the ones that I gave you guys the handout tonight. Some of them have like repair orders from the city, but it still doesn't give us a dollar amount, and I'm not really sure how to come up with the dollar amount of what it would cost to get these properties back up to code. Do you have anything you want to share, John?
Well, I just want to point out that this change in the law, essentially, it's twofold, because our legislature in April of 2022 codified into law this new rule that, whereas before, when we took a tax deed, the property owner only had a right to the surplusage, and it was only a right to about 50% of the surplusage. If they notified, if it was a homestead property, first of all, only a homestead property, and secondly, if they, within 60 days of the recording of the tax deed, notified the county that they wanted to exercise that right to the surplusage. So that's how the law once read. Now, with the legislation that took place, that is basically from April 1st, 2022 forward, all these properties here that on the list were taken January 23rd, I think.
January 6th of this year.
Okay, so this year, so the law clearly applies to all those parcels. Now the surplusage, whether it's homestead or not, whether it be a vacant lot, whether it be a home, whether it be a business, whether it be a second home, the surplusage by the new law must go to the former owner of the property. And what's troubling from a legal standpoint on this is that really the legislature, I don't think, harmonized the new law with some of the old law, because some of the old law says that when you take a tax deed, all liens, judgments, encumbrances are extinguished by the taking of the tax deed. They didn't change that, but they did indicate in the new law that we not only need to give the surplusage to the new owner, but we also need to satisfy liens and judgments. So some counties are saying, well, there aren't any liens and judgments because they've been extinguished. So almost ignoring that part of the legislation. Or, no, I think we have to read it to mean that we have to honor the tax lien, the mortgages, the judgments, the liens against the property. Obviously, if a property is encumbered by a huge mortgage, it's a windfall for the former owner if they get the surplus in, because the bank is the one that's owed the money, or the person that loaned them the money, the land contract, whatever, what have you, versus the former owner having, so to speak, clean equity in that property. So that's troubling from a how are we going to process this and do this perspective. And I'll tell you that I've been on a few calls. Supervisor Gearton mentioned the WCA. They've helped us try to understand this, and we've had lawyers from all across the state, all different counties, commenting on how they interpret it, and I can tell you it's not settled. There are some counties that really believe that all liens are extinguished, and so we don't have to worry about that. We just have to send a check to the former owner. And there are some counties that think that we have to get in the business now of prioritizing liens and judgments and indebtedness or encumbrances on the property. So that is a troubling part of this. Then couple that with the U.S. Supreme Court in a case called Tyler v. Hennepin County, a case emanating out of Minnesota, found that there was a violation in counties taking surplusage. There was a violation of the takings clause of the Constitution when the surplusage was kept by the government or kept by the county. Why? Because, to put it succinctly, render under Caesar what is Caesar's, but no more. So what was Caesar's, what's the government's, is the amount that the tax debt is. And in our statute, it allows for a recovery of penalties and interest and costs in addition to the actual principal of the tax, taxes due, tax lien. So the U.S. Supreme Court, really looking under a constitutional look at the law versus an equity standpoint, which is what the cases out of Wisconsin, which supported the surplusage going to the government, those looked at it from an equity standpoint. The U.S. Supreme Court looked at it from a takings clause of the Constitution standpoint. But what Tyler says that, again, is important, I think, is that the prior owner get that equity. In that case, the owner in Tyler was also indebted. It was a $40,000 sale. The owner owed $15,000, so there's a $25,000 surplusage. And the court, the U.S. Supreme Court, said that that $25,000 goes to the former owner, and that, you know, it should reflect a fair amount of what the property is worth. So I think what Reggie is saying is that when setting a price now, I think we have to be sensitive to the value of the property and being fair with the former owner and getting what we can in terms of a fair price for the property. Not that we haven't in the past, but it's really difficult because, right, a lot of these properties might even be assessed at a certain amount, but believe me, having gone to the eviction part of this after we take a tax deed, we go into buildings where the entire basement is water.
Yeah.
We go into buildings where there's so much junk that you can't, literally cannot walk through the building. There's not even a pathway. We go to buildings where, you know, windows are broken out. I was recently, at a business where, the roof is falling in. So understand that there's an assessed value on these properties, but it may not be at all reflective of what someone's willing to pay. I hope that it doesn't give you much clarity, but it tells you at least that we now have to be sensitive to the change in the legislation in Wisconsin and the U.S. Supreme Court case, which I think put a primacy or an emphasis on, in Tyler at least, we cannot retain the surplusage without reimbursing the owner. Again, Tyler owed all that money, and if it goes to Tyler, one of the Supreme Court justices says, you know, that's irrelevant, that it's a windfall. And then another thing is, you know, sometimes we don't recoup what is owed to the county or the municipalities because there's assessments and things. We don't recoup it. There's nothing in the law, no mechanism to have a deficiency judgment to get that back from a former owner. So in a sense of equities, it's not always fair to the taxpayer either, because we may, you know, lose money on some of these transactions. Without a doubt, we will on some of them.
So I would just like to add, you might think, like, if there was a mortgage, why didn't the mortgage company foreclose on them before we foreclosed on them for taxes? And if you look back to, was it like in 2008 to 2012, the mortgage companies were just overwhelmed with foreclosures, and so they couldn't keep up with it. And some of the properties we took back then, the mortgage companies were just like, we can't do it, we have too many. So then they don't exercise their opportunity to redeem the property, but we needed to get out of, quit paying the taxes on those properties. Right. And even in, I think you mentioned, even in the Tyler case, I mean, there wasn't any, had there been a mortgage still on,
yes,
that property of like $90,000 or something?
Yeah.
Or the original mortgage.
Yeah, it was a high amount, right?
Yeah, and so here that previous homeowner still got the money and the bank didn't get it. So what we used to do when we were setting the price is I would give you what the county is owed and kind of like a value of we'd go kind of on the assessed value and get somewhere in between there. Because all we really needed to do was get back what the county has paid out on the properties. But now, I don't think it's as simple as that. You know, we've got some of these houses that are, you know, like I'd say this, which one? This 1830 55th Street, fair market value is almost $100,000. It is a, you know, it is a two unit, but it needs a lot of work. And it's not in a really good neighborhood where houses are selling for a lot of money.
This, I'm shaking my head here during this whole discussion, because this is going to have a chilling effect on this whole issue. I mean, why would the county go through putting all this money in if the condition of these homes typically are as bad as they are, and that's often the case, put all this money in to get it to a point where you sell it at close to maybe fair market value? Why would you do that if once you sell it, you can't get the surplus anyway? You're only going to get the minimum whatever is owed to you. Why would the county do any? Why would any investor do that? No one's going to invest in tax deeds if you don't get any of the surplus. That's the whole point.
Right. I mean, the tax deeds generally are in, they've been neglected for at a minimum 3 years, but usually more than 3 years. And it doesn't take much for a house to start to fall apart when it's been neglected.
The county would be better off, writing this all off, because you're going to spend much more money fixing up to sell it. I mean, the differential is so high.
Yeah,
I mean,
see, well, and that would be the thing. We don't have the ability to fix it up to sell it.
Right.
But also, we have to take the houses because we can't keep paying the taxes out.
Right. But even if you don't sell it, someone else tries to buy the tax deed, they're not going to want to do it. You're not going to be able to sell it either, even if you don't fix it up. If this law holds, if I understand it correctly.
Right, and unless there is a way to, I don't know if we would have to start having someone reassess the property.
Appraise them, and do an appraisal.
But we cannot
be part of our cost.
No, we cannot subtract. We can't subtract the appraisal.
Why not?
That's like broker, realtor.
I think there's an argument that we could, but.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at the language in the new statute, it's fairly comprehensive with the cost that can be recouped, including legal fees and all the administrative costs of taking it. I mean, as far as a reassessment or a reappraisal, I have to look at that. And I'm not certain if that would fit in neatly. But understand, when we do a tax deed, we notify all those that have an interest in the property, whether it be a lien holder, a judgment holder, or a mortgage company that has money in that. It's sort of, this new law, in a way, it disincentivizes the idea of those companies or lien holders or judgment holders from doing anything about it, because if you interpret it to mean that we pay the lien, then why would they go to the trouble of foreclosing on it themselves? Or we're paying the taxes, as you said. Nobody really in Wisconsin that I'm aware of buys tax deeds. You know, they don't buy the deed. They may pay the taxes and put a lien on the property, but why would you do that in this scenario unless, I don't know why you would. Because if you're a banking company and you loan money to this company, you know, you may or may not get your money back under the new law, but if we're going to take it and pay the liens, if that's how you interpret it and we do it, then the bank should just sit back and wait till that happens, because it's more money for them to initiate the foreclosure. Christina.
Patty, you have something?
I did have a question, because I also sat on the WCA presentation and I didn't realize that we had to sell it for fair value. I thought we couldn't keep the proceeds, any surplus proceeds, understandably. So when I looked at these, I thought, why would the board choose to price it any higher than what we need to get? And then, yes, there might be surplus, because when these auctions start, they're after the property.
They're investing and they're going to flip a property or whatever. That is out of our hands. The surplus would then require the work of pursuing the owner. And as I understand, the last known address is just not enough. We have to go further than that to try to find that person. But I didn't understand it to be that we had, how can we guarantee a fair value?
That's the problem, valuation. When do you do the valuation, for one thing, but also, yeah, how do you really get to a fair assessment of what it's worth if it's falling apart?
My second thought was what I just said. You hire an appraiser, we have it appraised, then we know a fair value. That's what it gets priced at. But what if that's not what we get? Are we on the hook for that difference, even though we didn't get it?
I mean, there's always the potential someone could, I suppose, you know, file a lawsuit saying that we did not market the property effectively, we did not get a fair value. You know, I can see such a suit being filed. I don't know where that would go. I honestly don't. But in terms of, you know, getting back the taxes that were out or the assessments for the municipalities, that seems like a bare minimum. That we want. We've always done that way. But now I think that, you know, we have to make a good faith effort to get as close to the fair market value. And again, that may be affected by the condition of the property. The reality may be, you know, an assessed property at $100,000 may only be worth $50,000 because, yeah, the owner let it fall into disrepair for the last 8 to 10 years, and now it's going to maybe be raised.
Right, so, and I think the way to protect the county from any possible cases coming forward against the county is that we have to have some kind of proof as to why the property is only worth, not $100,000, but $50,000, because it needs $30,000 in repairs. I think we need to have some sort of system now of a backup as to why we can't. I can't just say, I mean, I can go look at the properties and think, oh, this is really bad, who would even want to live here? But I don't know how much it would cost to fix it up. I think we need documentation to back up whatever prices we do set. So, like, as I brought this to you guys tonight, it isn't necessarily that I think you can set prices. It's at this point, it's more for, we need to understand that we're all on the same page on how we are going to move forward with being able to price these tax deeds. And I mean, I have 40 properties that I need to sell right now. I have more, but I have 40. This is only 10. John's in the process, we're in the process of another.
Well, 71, but we've already eliminated. By doing the process, you get people to redeem the property. So I'd say we're down to, you know, 50 at this point.
Yeah, but we'll probably still come out somewhere between 35 and 40 properties when it's all said and done. And they cost a lot for us to maintain having this much. Before, we used to be able to use that surplus to help it kind of balanced it all out, help maintain the other properties, the properties we can't. Nobody wants, or we can't sell for whatever reason.
David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was decades ago when I set up the language in the chart of accounts for the gain and loss on tax deed. But in the description of the chart of accounts, we allowed the county clerk to use that money to maintain the property and to get it ready for sale. In this case, it seems like what I heard from the finance director, those costs would be permissible in the chart of accounts there.
You mean an appraiser?
You can confirm that with the administration, but that would seem a prudent step to be taken to get an appraisal. In the old days, we used to, when we had county assessing, this committee would get in a van or a truck and drive around and set the value of the property. And so we would do that. And then when we lost county assessing, we looked at other data. This seems more critical now to get an appraisal in order to protect the county. I've been to several Do they still have them in the lobby over there, in the safety building lobby, the sale?
Well, that's the forest, or that's the sheriff's foreclosure. Yeah. I have mine as a sealed bid down in the office.
So you do yours in the office, the sheriff does the, when they take a property, they do theirs there. So that's that process, the sheriff's process is not under the Supreme Court ruling?
Yeah, this is related to tax deeds.
Right, so this is not if they're getting booted out. So that process, this law does not pertain to the sales and that the sheriff
not, right.
Okay, no. Good, all right, good. I didn't think so, but I just wanted to ask that while I was here. But, so that's, those are my questions, and with that I yield.
Can I just chime in on that a bit? This is what the law says, the new law says, about what costs we can take out. It says that the net proceeds are determined by subtracting from the sale price the following costs: personnel costs associated with them as well, foreclosure costs, record keeping costs, legal costs, advertising costs, and title insurance costs. And then it goes on to say a county may establish a reasonable estimate of the average cost of the subdivision incurred with respect to property sold after taking a tax deed, which it may use instead of determining the actual cost for any parcel sold by the county, meaning you can come up with an average. But I mean, you know, could we fit into any of those in the foreclosure costs or the recording or the record keeping costs the idea of an assessment? I think there's an argument, and probably a decent one, that the answer is yes. But that would be, but that is what the legislature said that we should be able to take out in terms of costs.
Right, and then it goes on to the actual costs. And I guess what I'm getting an appraisal, I guess, is different than where it says, except for the real estate agent or broker fees paid. We can't deduct those. So an appraiser is separate from being like a broker fee.
I would think yes.
Yeah.
And there is a catch-all also that all other costs that are reasonable and necessary to sell the property. Well, if it's been in such a changing state of condition, one could certainly argue that it's necessary to find out the valuation as a reasonable aspect of selling the property.
And it also creates consistency. If we're having them appraised, this is our basis for the fair value. No, I think this one's worth more or this one's worth less. It's a consistent, independent model that could be drawn upon to support the fair value estimate. But again, I come back to, let's say the fair value comes out at 171 and the auction sells it at $50,000. Are we as the county, after satisfying our $21,000, still on the hook for that difference to that property owner, even though we didn't get it? Or is that where just the surplus language comes in?
I would think just the surplus language.
Okay.
Again, could someone file a suit and try to argue that it should be fair market value? That they certainly could.
And my second question is not, it's related, but not exactly the same. Many times we give parcels to municipalities. A lot of times those retention ponds in a subdivision, because they can assess, do special assessments on them, we cannot. There's a value to that. There's a value to that parcel that we might give to the city, a gas station that we give to them because they're gonna do the remediation because they can form a TID. We did a couple of those several years ago. There was a value to that. We didn't get any money. In fact, we usually forgive the taxes too. We don't have to do the remediation. There's a value to us. Is there now something?
Excellent question. On that point number four, or I think it's number four on the, no, number three under implications. Yeah, there's no obligation to sell the property under the law. But again, you look at Tyler, the Hennepin County, it's arguably a constitutional taking. It's the value of that property is more than the tax indebtedness. So you're at loggerheads. I don't know the answer. It seems to me there's a community value, as you say, to sometimes transferring to a conservancy or to a municipality, conservancy through a municipality, but through a municipality for other purposes as well, for retention purposes.
So can I comment, Patty, to your first question about, okay, if it gets a property gets appraised at 100,000 but we only sell it at 50, what allows us to only get 50? Like when we set the auction, we start with an opening, you know, like you can't bid below. Right. It's a
right.
price that you, and you have to, you can bid up, but you can't bid down. So
even if you have the appraisal?
No, her point is, so the appraisal may say it's worth $170,000.
Yeah.
And that may be where the board sets that minimum. But then we don't get any bids for $170,000. Typically, what we would do in the past is if the committee set a dollar amount and we didn't get any, we'd come back and you would choose to lower that amount.
So if you had the appraisal up front and said that, well, because of all these defects, it's worth 50, why can't you start at 50?
Well, then we would start at 50. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but she, that's not quite what Patty said when she asked the question.
Yeah, so if you have every one of them appraised, I think you're clear, aren't you?
Then we have some backing for why we have that pricing. The other thing, my concern too, and this was discussed, is with, like, when we do give properties to the city or a municipality, but just say the city, for instance, and we forgive those taxes, there is still a question whether we're liable for the value of that property that was talked about in that meeting that we had. I've been trying to get some more information from the WCA, but they didn't have anything more together yet. But my concern there is, like, Tuesday I just did the Habitat for Humanity build, and we were in Wilson Heights. So some of those properties, I think, are properties that we at one point had transferred to the city for the city to, then they donated it to Habitat for Humanity, and then they build affordable housing. Like, that's kind of some of the process of what we do with some of the properties and these areas of the city where they're trying to clean things up and build affordable housing. And this, to me, limits what our growth in our community and our improvements. If we, do you understand
if
the question?
If we're liable for not providing a surplus from a property that, you know, mm-hmm. is worth more than the indebtedness, then there's a liability question. You know, are we liable for that? Or again, are we not obligated to sell it? We can give it to a municipality, which is the law in Wisconsin. It's always been that way. We can transfer it to a municipality. That's, other than having a public auction, that's the only other way really to dispose of tax deed property. You know, we can transfer it to a municipality, and then they can do with it. They have much more freedom in terms of what they can do with that property.
All right. Anyone else? Byron?
Yeah. This is the point I was going to make. If we're not in the business of selling property, then I would argue that we could say that by putting it up for auction, putting it out there to the public, that is our attempt to try to get let the market decide what that property is. Whatever it sells for, that is what the fair market is, because the market has determined. So it would behoove us to just put it at the selling price of getting our expenses back, and if it ends up going for more than that, then that's the, and if the new statute determines what the definition of a surplus is, then that surplus can go to the, and then that would satisfy the attempt on our part to get fair market by putting it up on auction, letting the market decide.
Which is how we did it before.
This is how we've done it before, so it's not different than how we've done it in the past. We're not a real estate company.
Yeah. Aaron,
You said you've been asking WCA for help with this. I just looked up who introduced the bill. Senator Voss is one of the people that introduced it. You might want to contact him, since he introduced the bill, and ask him your questions and try to get answers from him.
Yeah, I just don't
want to... He represents Kenosha County.
I don't want to put I don't want us to make decisions. To me, this whole law is very unclear.
Right,
and I don't want something bad to come back at Kenosha County.
And Senator Knotts can ask Sledge Council to give opinions on your questions.
I think we need some answers on this. I mean, if that $171,000 house was sold for that price, and we are only owed $21,000 in taxes, that's $150,000 surplus that goes to the former owner. None of that money we can use to fix up the house. And if we had to put $50,000 in the county, you're spending $50,000 to get $21,000.
Well, we would get the fifty grand back.
We would get the $50,000
yeah.
grand back.
Yeah, it says money to sell the house.
Yeah. Okay.
We can
if we had to invest money into the property to sell it, we would get.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better.
Okay.
So, in my mind, I agree that there the property is only worth what somebody's willing to pay on that day. That's and so when you have a auction or whatever anybody's willing to pay, the most that person's willing to pay, that's what it's worth on that day. And that would be my argument to these people if they wanted to come and say, oh, you should have sold that for more. Nobody wanted to pay more.
Well, there is somewhere, where does this whole fair market value, where does that come from? Because that seems to be what's confusing all of the counties.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one way of interpreting valuation. Is it fair market value? Is it assessed value? It's really what the market will bear.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I mean, I've heard people argue that the operation of a free market where it's put on the market by a real estate agent is different than if we auction it. That if we auction it, fewer people know about it. So there's an argument, I suppose, that someone could put forward that the market, the price you get at an auction is not reflective of fair market value. I mean, sometimes people feel that way.
But we can't recoup the realtor costs, so.
We can't sell it through a realtor and pay a commission. We can't pay those realtor costs.
Right.
But I think that we can pay an appraiser because that is a cost to help us to be able to sell the property.
Okay.
No one's profiting on it. Yes, the appraiser is doing a service no different than the lawn mowing company is cutting the grass. And we pay them and we track those expenses because we needed to maintain the property. This would be an expense similar to that.
And now you're hiring a professional who knows how to appraise a property rather than us trying to come up with some arbitrary number or something that complies with the statute.
And the appraisal is not going to change the amount the buyer's willing to pay. And
correct.
So now we're going to get an offer maybe less than the appraisal. To me, we're putting ourselves at risk of, hey, you shouldn't have taken that bid. You should have waited and got something. You got more.
Well, we can't take anything less than what we put it out for. So if I were selling a property for $50,000 and you say, I'm only going to pay $25,000 and you're the only person interested in that property, we can't sell it to you without going through the whole process again and offering it to the public for a lower price.
Yeah, but I'm saying if we have the appraisal, is that going to be the
now we're putting ourselves on the hook by getting an appraisal.
Right.
And if you end up selling it for... But if you don't, if you may end up not selling anything at that point.
But if we documented that we attempted to get that
important
appraised value, were unable to lower the price, there would be a trail.
Right, and that's my concern. That's what I think is really important with this, is the documentation of why we're making the decisions we're making in case someone were to come back at us. And try to say that the law is saying something different. Because if you read the whole thing, it's really, it conflicts with itself. And this is mostly going to, for the most part, well, it will affect vacant land too. But it's really the houses, because like at the end, you know, down here, I've got one property in Summers. That piece of property is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that one, you know, it's 2 acres and it's in a nice neighborhood and it's
beautiful. It's in the Village of Summers.
Where is that?
On 17th Street. Inside 7th Street.
Oh, 17th. Oh,
since
the
second from the bottom.
No, there's one at the other one that is.
I thought the bottom one was the one you were talking about.
914 7th Street.
Oh, this one?
No.
The one above
17th
that.
Street, Summers.
17th Street, Summers is just vacant, 2 acres. And that's in, if you look at the, it's the second to the last in the group that I handed out, you can see how it lays in the neighborhood. And I put just kind of a shot of, it's, you know, it's a good buildable lot.
It's that Eagle.
A couple acres.
What's it called, Eagle?
I couldn't find what subdivision it was in. I was looking to find what subdivision it was in, but it's not included in the legal description.
Yeah, that could be worth hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Did I hear you correctly? You do pay the liens, like judgment liens, under this law? No.
That's kind of what's at question.
That's debatable. The law definitely references paying them. So, one interpretation is that you have to pay the liens and judgments and any mortgages out of the surplusage, and then the balance would go to the owner. But again, that's not in harmony with the idea that a tax deed extinguishes those liens and judgments and mortgages.
So, question. Okay.
Are you going to clarify that point, Deb? Because if you don't pay them, you could be liable for non-payment.
That's the point. We don't have clarity on this. I can't clarify it. When I read through the statute and made some notes, and it says pay off any lien placed on the property at the time of the foreclosure. But the true definition of a tax deed extinguishes all liens, so it makes a clean title
before we take it, correct?
Can't you go through the
end run process, what is that take date? Is it when we start the end run process, or is it when we get the judgment that says all liens are forgiven and the property is now the county's?
Or is it the recording of the deed, because that's slightly separate as well.
Does that occur after all of the court dates?
Yes.
Sure does.
Okay.
Yeah, when the final judgment.
So at that time, there are no liens.
There are liens up until that judgment.
Up until that time. But
that's why we provide
notice. When we take it, it has no liens.
Right. So that's the...
So that's where it's... I understand you're saying it's contradicting itself. I get that. Mm-hmm. But I think if we follow that language, the liens are extinguished, as you said in the beginning, by the process prior to us taking it.
Right.
So there are no
from when we take it. That's
correct.
From a due process standpoint, if you notify the mortgage holders, they have the right to redeem.
They
can pay the taxes.
Yep.
And that's why an interpretation is, and the way the law in Wisconsin has read and been interpreted, is that extinguishes those liens, because they've had that due process notice. Mm-hmm. We do notify all lien holders and judgment holders and interest holders of property, for months before we take the deed, with
the
opportunity to redeem.
I still think the idea of an appraisal is worth investigating, because I was on the board of review for, 20 years up there, right? If you have an appraisal, and then you go out to the market, and the market's showing that the appraisal is faulty, then you go back and reevaluate the appraisal and get a correct appraisal, because the fair market value is, the appraisal is supposed to be what the fair market value is. And that's what Supervisor Stocker said. I know when we're going through the board of review, the number one piece of evidence of what the fair market value is an arm's length sale. So that's really the thing that drives the market. There's other pieces that become second, third, fourth tier, but that arm's length sale is number one. But if the appraisals are coming in at 100 and you're only able to get 20, there's something going wrong with that appraisal process. So it still seems to be, with what I'm hearing, that's a good way to protect us from this what's happening now until the thing sifts its way, lawsuits happen, and then you get some precedent, and then you can figure it out. We still have to proceed, and it's not worth just sitting on hundreds of properties. We have to move ahead with them.
Right, because it does cost us to continue to maintain them. People use them as dumping grounds, and then, you know,
right.
There we are cleaning up tires and whatever else.
Can't you get an Attorney General's opinion on the procedure to be used under this new law?
Has the Attorney General given a...
Not on the new law.
Couldn't you ask for that?
I think that could be asked for. I don't know if the WCA has thought about that, or I haven't heard them say that they were going to, but yes, I think.
But we could. Ask.
We could.
Sure.
All right, so like I said, I wasn't necessarily expecting you to give prices. We needed to discuss what the process for us, for the county, is going to be going forward, trying to understand and follow what this law is and make sure that we look out for ourselves.
Yeah.
The number one thing that happens to us that'll cost us way more than any lawsuit or anything else is to not get these back on the tax rolls and to keep paying, you know, I mean, once we take them, I know that stops the tax, but prior to the time we take them, you know, to have a bunch of these out there we're not taking for because we're worried about the legalities,
right.
That hurts us more than anything. We're paying school taxes, city taxes, everything else, and that'll cost us a lot more than going through this process, taking them, and then getting them back on the market again. So that, by not doing what we're doing now, will cost us way more than any other lawsuit or any other thing that happens to us.
So this evening, what action are you requesting us to take, if any?
Well, if going the route of getting the properties appraised, and because that will cost the county money too, it's not something we normally did with most properties. You know, there was an occasion there would be an appraisal done in the past, but typically that's not what we have done. So if I'm to move forward with getting each of these properties appraised, then I want to know that that's the process that the county's going to follow.
Before the auction?
Before an auction.
So you'd have to come back with 10 appraisals.
No more.
Yeah, I have a whole lot of properties.
Okay.
I didn't want to overwhelm you.
I was going to say, please get the one as small a portion of it.
I have at least 40.
40?
At least.
So if
and we're going to be taking more
so
before the end of the year.
So appraisal at least, what, $300 or $500?
Appraisal?
Yeah. $400
at least.
Yeah.
Yep. Somewhere around
so
there.
So 400 times 40?
Depends how in depth it is. I mean, if they go inside and which sounds like we want them to.
Yeah, they would need to.
Yeah.
How did you get these fair market?
That's on the tax bill.
Oh, okay. That's just an estimate.
There's an
right.
assumption of condition in that.
So, what is your pleasure tonight? Do you want to authorize appraisals? Do you want to
that would
go with these numbers and do as we have, or?
I think
we need to make a decision.
I think that at least start with these 10 that I've got kind of put together and start. I would like then to try the appraisal process and see where that comes out. We won't do like all of them all at once, but just see where we, like these 10, see how those numbers come in, try the auction with those numbers so we have backup for the reason that we're doing everything that we're doing.
Kim?
How do you have a budget to pay for that, or is that so we have to come up with, we do have $5,000 basically?
Yes.
There's a profit and loss fund. Werner or Patty can tell you.
There's budget resolution language that allows for each parcel.
So I think we need a motion then to authorize the county clerk to have each appraised, pay for it, and come back, and we'll set the price.
I would so move.
Second.
Discussion? And you're going to select the appraiser, or?
I will probably talk with purchasing about how to go about that.
Get a discount.
That process, yeah.
But get a really good appraisal so they're not coming in too high.
Yeah, but I appreciate your time and trying to understand this. This is not a fun part. No.
Junior. Oh, we need to vote on it.
Any other discussion on this? So, you know, if you see an appraisal, a lot of appraisals come in, they're a big book. We don't need a big book.
Just like when we get...
That's usually for the bank.
The same thing when we, like, get the title search and all that done, it's not as in-depth as, like, when you're just going to outright buy a house from someone else. And so I'm sure there's another way to have a quicker overview of what the properties were.
Well, we wanted to call it an appraisal, but it's kind of without all of the pages of... Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever read one, but they'll tell you about the economy and comparison.
Other houses.
Oh my gosh, we don't need all of that. You know, big books on this thing. So kind of a junior number.
Yeah.
Further discussion? All right, we'll start with the youth in government.
What do you guys think?
Sounds good.
So three voting sounds good.
You all voted aye.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Three voted aye.
All right, and no more further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Thank you for your time. Very
good. Thank you. All right, did we go through the audit bills? Is that being signed by anybody? Any questions, comments, discussion on bills? No? All right, reports. Do we have something from Human Services?
Human resources. Thank you. Just to share, for those of you who maybe haven't seen it in your email, Sean Smith, the chief information officer, has tendered his resignation. His last day will be next Friday. The county executive has appointed Ben Taggart, IT services manager, to take over the helm in the interim. We will conduct a formal recruitment process, of course. So Ben will be the acting chief information officer. I'm Sean's departure. That was it.
Oh, that's it. Okay. All right. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
For as long as you're at the table. We got in our email the follow-ups when someone quits. I'm blanking out the exit surveys. And I noticed the percentage is pretty low. Is there any of responses? Is there any way we can increase and get more responses or something like that? Or
I mean, we invite them to.
Or is that an industry norm?
It's that percentage? A pretty good response rate.
Is it okay? Yeah. Okay, yeah. All right. Thank you.
Sure. All right, we'll move on. General fund
report. Everybody should have a copy at their place. This is the August year-end forecast. So I'll highlight the areas that changed from last month's report. On the top part, well actually it's overall, we had a little downtick. That's the in the box at the bottom there, dropping us about 300,000 negative. So to discuss the items that improved from last month, the treasure revenue surplus and net unrealized gains. I think it's that we can safely increase that estimate to $2 million. As the months keep stacking on, the likelihood of interest rates going the other direction, I think, dissipates. And I think with these interest revenues locking in, that's a good estimate at this point. Human services surplus declined a little bit based on the report. I put a holding place for a TID closing. Proceeds from the city of Kenosha. We're still awaiting the actual dollar amount, but as a holding place, I wanted to put something on here to make the committee aware that that is coming. The decrease in the tax delinquency reserve decrease to the increase still showing as a positive, but as we get more tax collections, that number will start coming better into focus. On the bottom side of the ledger here, I increased some of the deficits in the Sheriff's Department for operating expenditures and revenues. It's a continuation of the same for revenues. It's continuing the same soft numbers when it comes to federal marshal inmates reimbursements. It looks like after COVID, the amount of federal marshals that we get is kind of leveled off. So we'll have to address that in the 2024 budget process to lower that budget amount. And on the expenditure side, we have continuation of overtime in detentions and inmate medical and dental and prescription costs driving that number. I also lowered and put the sales tax revenue. I put a small deficit there now. We had, from last month, we had a month where our, let's see, what would that be? So we got in July, so our May number was a couple hundred thousand lower than last year. So now we're below what we were at last year's point. So I'm gonna start putting this at a deficit unless that starts ticking up. So that'll probably affect, by the time we go to talk about the 2024 budget, we might have a month or two more sales tax, but that will certainly be important in the decision on how we end up budgeting that sales tax revenue line item. Other than that, everything else is pretty much in the same range, but still in the same range of break even at this point. That's it.
All right, discussion on this? Anything else from finance?
Yes, the county will go to sale for the bonds on Tuesday, August 15th. We will need a special finance meeting before the board meeting that night so that the finance committee can review the bids. Ellers will come in with their sale date report like normal. If approved, then we'll go to board that night as well.
You want to do that at 6:30?
I'm okay with that. 6:30, everybody.
It's more than enough time.
On the 15th.
Yeah.
On the 15th.
15. All right, so everybody's agreed 6:30 on the 15th. Is that a bad time for anybody?
August 15th.
Tuesday? It's coming Tuesday.
Is anyone on the legislative committee here? No. I know John Poole is, but he'd come to this if he's coming to the meeting Tuesday.
All right, then we'll meet here in this room.
Actually, legislative, if they are meeting, they would probably have this room. It would probably be the auditor's room.
Okay.
This floor down.
All right.
We'll watch for that just in case they don't meet for some reason. I don't know.
I think I saw the agenda come out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll meet in the
August calendar.
All right. Any other business?
I also wanted to notify the committee. I'm sure that some of you have heard. I'm not sure if everyone has. So there is a meeting on August 31st. The county executive's CIP vision meeting. And more information will be coming on that. I do not know what the time is yet, but I just wanted to make sure everybody has a placeholder for that meeting. More information will follow as to time.
August 31st?
Unless we know the date. I mean,
do we know the time?
Okay.
And roughly it's 5 or 6?
In the evening?
Yes, I believe there is conversation about it being held at Brookside.
That's what I heard.
There's room enough there?
Yes, I believe in the Southport room.
The cafeteria?
Yeah. Yep.
That's what I called you.
Okay, fine. as I said, there's still several weeks to go, so there'll be more information coming out on that.
Any other business?
you think, I didn't hear, did you think it would be six-ish? I know it's not set yet, or five-ish?
I would say six-ish, but I don't know.
I can't imagine the earlier than 5:30, it's a lot of folks who work at 5:00.
I'll put 5:30 down just to...
But that's kind of a...
And the vision meeting in April was at 6:00.
I think we did the vision meeting at 6:00, so that we all had time to get food there.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know if there's food at this one or not, we have time.
I have on my calendar that was at 6:30, in April.
April was 6:30?
Yeah.
Okay. April, 6:30 is better than 5:00.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Okay.
And, yeah.
All right, any other business? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Sure. See everyone Tuesday. Sure.